But first this morning to Gaza. Yesterday, at least 15 people were killed and more than 200 injured when a UN-run school used as a shelter came under fire. There were more deaths overnight and there is still no sign of a ceasefire. The past 2 weeks of fighting have now claimed the lives of over 800 Palestinians and more than 33 Israelis. Well, just before we came on air, I spoke to Christopher Gunness, spokesman for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, or UNRWA. I asked him first if there was any more clarity at this point as to who had targeted the UN school, or indeed why.
Well, we gave the Israeli army the precise GPS coordinates of that school, which was sheltering hundreds of people, children, women, civilians of all sorts. We spent much of the morning begging, pleading with the Israeli army to allow a humanitarian corridor such that civilians could be evacuated. That never came, and in the end, it was impossible to evacuate civilians, and as a result, there was this appalling, appalling tragedy. I'm not saying that the IDF fired deliberately, but what I do know is if we'd had a proper evacuation of civilians, that disgusting, disgraceful carnage, that appalling human suffering that we saw on our TV sets yesterday would not have taken place.
And at this stage, I mean, you know, in the initial aftermath, the Israelis were saying, well, listen, Hamas were firing in the area. It could have been Hamas artillery. The IDF has accepted it was firing into the area at the point. Obviously, it's not saying it was targeting the school. But is it definitely an Israeli device that bombed the school?
We're not making that accusation, but let's hear the IDF come out clearly and make an on-the-record public denial that it was them that caused this. And, you know, that's partly why we're calling in the United Nations for investigation. We have to have transparency. We must get to the bottom of this. When we see a UN-protected area, a school with a blue flag on top of it, where hundreds of people came expecting safe sanctuary, and when we see the carnage that we saw because a shell lands or some object lands and explodes in the playground where they'd taken refuge, there has to be a proper examination. We have to establish irrefutably who was responsible, and there must be accountability such that this never happens again. There must be no more Beit Hanouns.
The Israelis are also saying that Hamas were firing rockets from the school, which is why they say it was targeted. Well, they targeted the area, if you like. Do you know, were Hamas firing rockets yesterday? Did you hear rockets going off? Did any of your people hear rockets in the area?
We have no evidence that there were rockets being fired from that school building. And we have absolutely no evidence that there were rockets in the school. On two occasions recently, we have discovered caches of rockets in our schools. We have come out publicly, proactively, completely transparently, condemned it. We've let all the parties know. We've been very transparent about that. We would have done exactly the same had we found rockets in our schools. No, there is no evidence that that school was that there were rockets being fired from that school building, or that there were rockets inside the school. Though it's quite interesting that, as you say, this is being put about by the Israeli army as if that was some kind of excuse for hitting it. But as I say, we are not accusing anyone. We want an investigation.
Yeah, the other thing is quite interesting this morning. I mean, the Times of Israel is reporting, you know, that as you were saying there, rockets have previously been found in UN schools or UN-run schools. They're very much equating the UN at this point with being supporters of Hamas. On the ground there, is this something, is this your perception of how the Israelis perceive the UN efforts on the ground?
Well, to begin with, it's utter rubbish, depending on whatever people's perceptions might be. We are very proud of our neutrality. We have regular inspections, for example, to make sure that there are no rockets in our schools. And by the way, that's precisely how these rockets were discovered. We have condemned them. We've condemned the groups who put them there, and we've condemned this as a flagrant violation of international law. If you think these are the words of an organization encouraging Hamas to do this, well, you know, I don't know how you could ever come to that conclusion. Of course not. We are a United Nations organization abiding by United Nations standards of neutrality. We have a raft of neutrality activities which we report on, by the way, to the satisfaction of our two largest donors, who are the United States and the European Union. Do you really think that those two that the United States and Europe, who are the biggest supporters of Israel on the international stage, our two largest donors, do you really think that they would be giving UNRWA the kind of money that they're giving to us if they really thought that we were in bed with terrorists who were attacking Israel in some way? Of course not. It's utter rubbish.
I'm not in any way saying that that is what we believe, or indeed your donors believe, but I'm saying that that
you
is...
You quoted the Times of Israel.
Yeah, I mean, that is the perception there. Is that one that you believe that they hold true, the Israelis? Or is
Look,
it convenient
the
for them?
I mean, it's really hard for me to get inside the mind of a right-wing Israeli newspaper editor that appears, you know, that writes the kind of stuff that they write. I mean, you'd really have to talk to some of the more right-wing people in Israel to get an idea of what's going on inside their heads. All I can say is, working on the ground as we do everything we can to implement the highest standards of neutrality, excuse me, and we do that to the satisfaction of our major donors, who so happen to be the biggest supporters of Israel on the international stage.
Christopher, it's not the first time that a UN installation has been targeted. How worried are you that this may happen again?
Well, you're right, it isn't. I mean, I remember back to January 2009, when our main headquarters in Gaza took a direct hit by Israeli white phosphorus, and our main warehouse in Gaza was burnt to a cinder. Ban Ki-moon condemned, Israel apologized and paid millions in compensation. So you're right, there is a long history of the Israeli army directly hitting, and I'm not saying it was intentional, but directly hitting UN compounds. Just in the last few days, there have been, before the Beit Hanun incident, there were three incidents of Israeli air power directly hitting UNRWA schools. And on one occasion, when we went back to investigate what had happened, my colleague who went back, an UNRWA official, was nearly killed by incoming Israeli fire. So, you know, yes, there is a long history. There's also a very worrying, more recent history of these kinds of incidents, which is why we say, let's have a proper investigation. Meanwhile, can the parties please respect the sanctity of civilian life, international humanitarian law obligations towards humanitarian workers, and can they also respect the inviolability of UN property and premises? Because enough is enough. There cannot be another scene of utter carnage like we saw yesterday at Beit Hanun.
And Christopher, this is what you're calling for, an investigation. Any reaction yet from the Israelis? Are you going to get it? And if so, what kind of timeline are you looking at here?
Well, we've said in a statement yesterday that they must start an immediate investigation, and let's see, because at the moment there are many, many accusations against the Israeli army. The Israeli army has said itself it's the most moral army in the world. So one would hope that, you know, given that's what it says about itself, there would be an immediate, open, comprehensive investigation that would establish irrefutably who is responsible, and one would hope that there would be accountability. I say again, though, I am not accusing the Israeli army. We need to find out what exactly was the truth, because the human suffering was appalling, and we have to do everything we can, including investigating, to make sure that this never happens again.
Christopher Gunness there, spokesman for the United Nations, speaking to me just before we came on air. Well, on the line now we have Reuters journalist Dan Williams, who joins us from Jerusalem. Dan, thank you for joining us this morning. Dan, before we speak about Gaza, it would seem that overnight there has been quite a reaction on the West Bank. Can you fill us in on that?
Yes, as you noted, a reaction I think spurred by a combination of things. First of all, the mounting bloodshed in Gaza, a sense of solidarity in the West Bank, a sense of a political disconnect. The West Bank is effectively under exclusive control of the US-backed Palestinian administration, whereas Gaza is under the effective control of Hamas, although the two formerly rival factions did enter a unity government recently. The disconnect is still very much felt, and I imagine many Palestinians in the West Bank think more solidarity should be shown. The scale of that demonstration, it had the appearance of a riot, actually, in front of an Israeli military checkpoint, was not something that's been seen here in recent years. It appeared to recall the full-scale Palestinian revolts of former years. And I think the Israelis are especially worried there might be spillover today in Jerusalem, given that this is the final Friday prayers of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Now, it's possible that the violence was spurred on by the fact this is a religiously fraught time of year, but I don't think anyone would dispute that events in Gaza, the apparent diplomatic dead end there, despite intensive mediation efforts on a truce, I don't think anyone would doubt that was a major contribution.
Absolutely. And can I ask you about the diplomatic efforts? I mean, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the bombing of that UN facility yesterday, we saw a number of Israeli spokespeople coming out and saying that, well, you know, we've agreed to a ceasefire. It's Hamas who haven't. Where exactly are they in terms of this ceasefire? Have they agreed to a ceasefire? And why are Hamas saying that, you know, they weren't part of this alleged ceasefire?
Well, I think the Israeli count is true. We know that last week, before the hostilities began, before the ground offensive began, Israel had joined a ceasefire unilaterally called by Egypt. It held fire for 6 hours while Palestinian rocket fire from Gaza continued. And even prior to launching this offensive, there were several signals, including briefings I attended with many other foreign journalists, where even the Israeli military said it was looking to de-escalate with Gaza. The way things stand now is Hamas said from the outset that it had not been properly consulted by Egypt, and it's worth recalling that it has a very troubled relationship with the new Egyptian government, not least because Egypt has its own blockade on Gaza from its own border and considers Hamas a security threat or a threat to current Egyptian interests. So Hamas felt it had been excluded. And really, there is a very difficult setup here in that the main diplomat trying to advance a truce is the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry. But, of course, Washington shuns Hamas, as does the European Union, as does Israel, of course. They all list Hamas as a terrorist group, which means that Kerry, for all his efforts, has to go through proxies. There's been the involvement of Egypt, where he's now sitting in Cairo, the U.S.-backed Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, Qatar, which Israel is less happy about, Turkey, which Israel is far less happy about, given its current problems with Turkey. So there is a sense of chasing a tail here. And I think while the Americans have tried to increase pressure by saying last night that Kerry was not going to wait around forever, i.e. he may leave today or tomorrow if there is not some kind of breakthrough. And despite Egypt saying that the festival of Eid al-Fitr on Monday, Tuesday, which marks the end of Ramadan, and in the past, on occasions in some conflicts, has been a time for goodwill gestures, they've said that holiday may be the time for it to bring in the truth. So there are a number of pressure points here being applied in the hope that Hamas will relent, in the hope that Israel will relent. For now, it doesn't appear to be bearing fruit. It's also worth noting that both Hamas and Israel, while expressing openness to a truce, have quite dramatically different conditions, terms for how the truce would unfold. Israel, for its part, wants to be able to continue hunting tunnels within Gazan territory with its troops, which I imagine the Palestinians would not see as acceptable as part of a truce. And the Palestinians want guarantees that the long-running embargo on Gaza, both by Israel and by Egypt, will be lifted. So it's very, very hard to reconcile these positions, not least because communications are so difficult.
So it would seem that any type of a ceasefire, humanitarian or permanent or whatever, is quite a way off yet.
It would. I'd be careful with putting too much stress on the term humanitarian ceasefire. A ceasefire is a ceasefire, so potentially the word humanitarian is being used because it enables one or both of the sides to avoid seeming to accommodate the other. Basically, the appeal is to universal human interests, the civilians who are suffering here. But in the end of the day, a humanitarian ceasefire could potentially unfold into a longer-term accommodation, obviously mediated. And I think that was the original Egyptian idea. The original Egyptian idea was an unconditional cessation of fire, which obviously the first beneficiaries of that would be the civilians stuck in the middle, with days to follow in which the sides, through mediators, would discuss terms for a more extended accommodation. So humanitarian or not, what's being discussed is a truce that would hold for at least a few days, in which time either side would hope to advance its demands.
Okay, well, Dan Williams, thank you very much indeed for joining us from Jerusalem this morning.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.